everyone. Welcome back to the Cycling Tips Nerd Alert Podcast. It's deep dive week for us here, and joining Cycling Tips Senior Tech Editor Dave Rome and me is a very special guest to provide some perspective on gravel tech. Veteran Canadian mountain bike cyclocross and now gravel pro racer and social media influencer extraordinaire, Jeff Kabush. Welcome to the show, Jeff, and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks. Yeah, no, it's fun to be here. I follow you guys along, influencing me too, so it'll be fun to have a little chat. Appreciate you guys' perspective on things.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time I, or actually the first time I spoke with you somewhere, probably at some race, I'm sure. I'm pretty sure it was back in the Maxxis days, though, and you were either on a Lightspeed or a Turner. So exactly how long have you been racing for a living now?
Well, good question. I mean, I've been racing, quote unquote, pro since my junior days. I kind of started racing pro in 96 and went to school. I actually got a engineering degree through 2003, but kind of my breakout was actually in Sydney 2000, where I was top 10 at the Olympics. And that was around the point I actually would say I started making money and kind of finished off my degree in 03. And then just, yeah, been riding my bike ever since.
Back in the sideburn days.
Yeah. Facial hair. No, I've seen, man, it's been really interesting. I mean, yeah, from start out, what I've seen in my career, I mean, yeah, in the early 90s when I was just a kid, I found the sport, I had all the magazines, and man, pretty funny looking back how things have changed since back in the day.
It has, but it's also been really cool to see how, you know, you see all these successful people who are successful on a race course, at least anyway. And then, you know, they get older or they retire or they're just not as fast as they used to be and they kind of just fade away. And it's nice to see that you're still around.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of my tagline is keep riding till the fun stops. But I mean, yeah, I just love riding my bike and staying healthy. And I've, yeah, definitely been always fascinated by the tech side of the sport, kind of whether it's testing R&D and pushing some products forward. So involved in all kinds of things still, and yeah, still really having a good time.
You recently penned an opinion piece that's posted on cyclingtips.com that I would highly recommend that everyone read. It's discussing some issues regarding how social media should or shouldn't have an effect on a person's career racing. But even before the advent of social media, racers often played a supplemental role to sponsors in the form of product development. And there's obviously been a lot of people who have been fast on a bike over the years, but fewer and further between are riders who can also provide, you know, that sort of good feedback, a useful feedback to development people on the gear that they're riding. And as it turns out, you're one of those people. You mentioned that you have a bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering from University of Victoria, I think, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So how has that served you in this role? And how does that fit in with your interest in bike nerdery in general?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely been an asset. I mean, the engineering degree I did just because it was something I was curious always in how things worked. And I mean, yeah, it's definitely, I mean, and there's all kinds of spots for different kinds of athletes to help companies. And that's always been something I guess I just motivated by is working on the product and learning about the product. And yeah, it's definitely served me well, and one of the reasons I think I'm still involved. Certainly have a good perspective from seeing, man, so many different equipment changes over the year, and able to kind of reflect back on how some things have affected it. But also, I think across disciplines, this really helps when I'm, yeah, looking at new equipment like we see in gravel right now, and kind of be able to reflect back and some of the feelings and testing I've done from mountain bike, cross, and even, yeah, going across the spectrum to racing gravity as well. So it's just, yeah, I mean, athletes got to kind of figure out what they enjoy and are motivated by. And I've, yeah, at the end of the day, I just like riding my bike and working with the product. And it's definitely still fun to get new stuff and test things out and just try to give a good perspective back to the companies I'm working with about how I see them fitting in.
For some of the, I guess, people newer to the sport, or maybe perhaps just exclusively from the road end of things, can you provide some examples of some of the products that you've, I guess, helped influence or helped design that you saw through from like prototype through to final production? Are there any that sort of stand out over the years that you're quite proud of that you think are popular?
one of the funniest things I still see most people don't even know, but you pull out the Cobalt on almost any Fox fork right now and you'll see what is my
still get your name on it.
Is my signature, yeah. And that just came about. I mean, yeah, thru-axle started to come onto to XC bikes, and at first it was just a flip lever, and you know, being an XC racer, I wanted to see like, well, can we just put a, you know, 6 or 8 mil end on that and save some weight? So I just kind of made a request with Fox and kind of evolved over the years, and now it's, yeah, across the spectrum on all the Fox bikes, and still have the old prototype. But yeah, I mean, there's lots of stuff. I mean, with one by in XC racing, I won't claim I was the first, but definitely one of the early adopters, along with Adam Craig, and
yep.
It was solving an issue. I mean, gearing, man, it was definitely challenging with the Shimano gearing. And ironically, Shimano really didn't want us running the one by because they were selling the two by. But Adam and myself, we kind of sneaked through the cracks, and was actually the first World Cup winner on one by in 2009. But I think just growing up in BC, I kind of understood some of the advantages of some of the equipment, and for sure, I've been well known for riser bars. One of the first, you know, XC riders. I mean, just I rode with some of the downhillers in BC, and in the winter, it's really challenging up there. So put a wider kind of, back then it was almost moto style bar on, and just, yeah, could feel the difference. And that's how I'm always, yeah, curious to try things throughout my career, including now, even if I'm a bit skeptical, just to try them and get a feel and see if think it makes sense.
Well, I can say from roughly 09, you were the reason, you and Adam actually were the reason I had an MRP chain guide and a too small gear ratio on my mountain bike with riser bars.
Well, yeah, I mean, I can remember the first time I threw it on was at the Mont Saint Anne World Cup, and back then the rear cassette, yep, was 11:32, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna run a 34.
Mm-hmm.
And man, the last time up these switchbacks on the last lap, I couldn't even ride. I had to walk up, but I was luckily done well enough to still finish on the podium there in third. And then the next weekend in Bromont, where I won, people thought I was crazy. I was running a 32 chain ring, which all the Euros thought was, oh, that's way too small, but it was really steep, and I was able to just spin away and ride through the mud. Didn't have any issues, and man, it's definitely... things are a lot more durable now, but yeah, it was definitely an advantage having the one by simple system.
And I guess for anyone who hasn't ridden up in BC, I mean, I guess the definition of XC riding up in BC is often a little different than what people are used to.
Yeah, I mean, the trail rating systems are a little bit different. I kind of chuckle at myself when some places when I see a Black Diamond trail, but it's definitely, yeah, served myself well. And yeah, part of the reason I was able to kind of survive in the sport and still in through some dark days for sure with doping in sport, I was still able to have some success on some technical courses. But yeah, it's always been a good proving ground up there with the conditions. And yeah, I just remember little things that were so groundbreaking, like when disc brakes came in. I mean, man, V brakes were pretty amazing in the dry, but man, it was like 3 hours up there and they'd just be destroyed. And so when we got disc brakes in the winter, it was like pretty mind blowing. We could actually ride all winter and not destroy things every 3 hours.
I was going to say you could actually finish an entire ride.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about gravel racing. I know that you obviously still do pretty much all the disciplines, I guess certainly not as much cross as you used to back in the day, but when did you make the switch? Or I guess, when did you start doing gravel racing, I should say?
It's a good question. I think when I started the partnership, I guess probably hanging out in NorCal, so there's some really fun local events. I mean, I don't even know what to call gravel, but there's a Grasshopper series, which is mixed terrain, which was a ton of fun. Kind of going that direction, and some of the fun events that Sierra Trails puts on, Lost and Found was probably one of my early events. And when I started the partnership with Yeti, I also started a partnership with Open Bicycles. The couple of the owners, Conroy and Kessler, are kind of friends. So got an Open, and that kind of really opened up some doors. They were one of the early ones that you could run mixed wheel sizes and more clearance. And I think that's when I started kind of exploring a little bit more on those bikes, what they're capable. And man, yeah, it's really ramped up the last 5 years. Started to do a few more events out in Kansas and around Grinduro, and got to experience, yeah, what the bikes can do. And especially, yeah, the last couple of years during COVID, experimenting with different stuff and pushing limits. And it's been a ton of fun for sure.
What do you think exactly constitutes gravel riding and racing anyway? And I guess what sort of gravel riding and racing do you prefer? Because it does really cover a pretty broad spectrum of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of debate about if gravel is even a good name for these bikes. But for me, I think like the beauty is kind of in the diversity or kind of bandwidth of what these bikes you can ride comfortably on. And that's one of the beautiful things, is you can ride from home, ride tarmac, yeah, ride gravel or dirt roads. But man, the capability has increased so much that, yeah, it's actually fun to ride a little bit of easy single track or rougher roads. And I think that's what's changed the last 3 years. I was, you know, enjoying doing some of these longer gravel rides, but they certainly beat me up. And now, last couple of years, with the advent of, you know, wider tires, gave some more capability, but also just the ergonomics on the brakes have really, remember, you back, I'm on Shimano, so the old dirt race, you wasn't as comfortable. You kind of pinch your fingers, but on the newer components, you got much more power, more comfortable in the bar, the wider tires, and then the advent of inserts just drop the pressure, so much more comfort. And yeah, even more recently, suspension fork, which I was certainly skeptical about, has, you know, really increased the enjoyment of where I can take those bikes and, yeah, do a 4 or 5 hour ride and come back feeling, you know, pretty comfortable and not just trashed.
Oh man, so much to unpack there. And I feel like we are most definitely going to be getting into all of that stuff in a little bit more detail as we get through this. Dave and I do have a pretty big list of questions that we want to pick your brain on regarding gravel bikes and tech and that sort of thing. What are your thoughts on gravel bike geometry in general? Like, what should it be like? You know, coming from someone who I would say you have experienced more or less the broad spectrum of what gravel bike geometry can be like, from like super quick cross bike like geometry to kind of more mountain bike like geometry. I mean, what do you prefer? What do you think it should be?
I mean, I still really feel like we're in the early stages of geometry development. I think the parts have really expanded rapidly, and we're still really trying to figure it out. I think they've become much, much more capable in the last 2 or 3 years. And I think we'll see some small adjustments as we move forward, just accounting for that ability to, I mean, yeah, go higher speeds on rougher terrain, see a little bit more slacker. I'm curious. I mean, I'm really curious to see if it follows along the lines of what we've seen on mountain bikes. We've certainly seen some extreme examples of that, I think, with that evil bike. And there's room for, I mean, all kinds of bikes. But yeah, I think it's, man, the components have really jumped a little bit ahead of frame geometry. And I'm curious to see if we'll see a little bit longer slacker. I mean, certainly for one thing I've noticed is even on road bars, where you mount your hoods, I'm always maxed out on the very top of those kind of clamping spots. And we'll see a little bit adjustment, I think, for position on the handlebars and ergonomics. And yeah, it's certainly be interesting to watch, but it's been really cool to see the evolving parts recently.
It's like how Jay Powell and Tim Johnson used to run their hoods in cross racing back in the day.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, some things have kind of stretched and reached, I think, diversity and bandwidth, enjoying riding all kinds of trains, I've certainly like reached a limit in this, like testing different stuff out, where the bike starts to get too heavy and sluggish. You can run bigger tires and heavier, more durable casing, but then you kind of start to lose some of that enjoyment of being able to ride smoothly and quickly around on the paved roads to the trail. And I mean, yeah, if you're just going strictly quote unquote under biking, then yeah, you're going to want a heavier, more durable thing. But even with the advent of, there's definitely a place for dropper posts, but yeah, for me, that was right now, that was just a bit a step too far to add weight. And I just, the lower gradient kind of descending, I didn't really find I used it that much to justify putting it on my bike. So we're definitely reaching the limits on a few of the bikes and figuring out what is going to be the best for the general consumer. I think there'll always be room around the edges for all kinds of fun and different bikes.
I mean, it sounds like essentially what you're saying is, yeah, we always have this debate, both internally and talking to readers and that sort of thing, about sort of how much overlap there can or should be between gravel bikes and essentially hardtail mountain bikes. Where do you think that line is? And kind of along that, I mean, to me, it always seems like the defining characteristic in terms of the gear is sort of the tires. So where do you think sort of gravel bikes stop and hardtails begin?
Well, for me, I mean, there's two big things for me is the right now is the gearing and the position. I mean, I think when you go to a flat bar, you're switching categories a little more than just subtly. I mean, I think that's the one big thing for me is, I mean, yeah, the diversity of being able to, you ride 20K or 20 miles to the trailhead on pavement comfortably. And yeah, having those multiple positions on a drop bar, handlebar really makes that more comfortable and effective than, I mean, yeah, you know, doing a road ride on a flat bar just isn't that fun. And the big thing for me is, as well as gearing, it's, man, it's a huge range of gears that are needed. And I think one by still really struggles. I mean, if you're doing pure off-road, the one by is doable right now, but yeah, to be able to ride comfortably on, you know, 45, 50 K an hour on the road and then climb up a steep kind of mountain road is still really a challenge on a one by system. So if those are two, I mean, there's tons of parts, but I think those are kind of two defining things is like the position to ride comfortably, which I think is a drop bar, and then having the gearing to be able to handle such a wide range of speeds.
So where are you at with tires then? Like, what do you usually run on gravel? As far as size and like tread type, I guess.
I guess like, I mean, yeah, I've spoken, I think, messaged a bit, but I'm pretty sold on inserts for gravel. And that has a big effect, I think, where I settle on tire size. But for me, I'm kind of most happy on kind of a 40C Rambler I'm riding with Maxxis. So kind of a 40C Rambler with an insert is kind of my happy spot. I've tried, you know, the bigger tires, and I'm optimistic and pushing to see some slightly higher volume tires that are kind of more of a race construction. I just found when I got to a 45C Rambler and their Silk Shield heavier casing, it started to feel, I mean, it's durable and awesome for riding off-road, but just started to feel a little more sluggish. And I think it'd be a good viable option if you're not running inserts, but I'm a huge advocate of the inserts that I'd like to find the balance, kind of a exo construction in the Maxxis tires in a 40C with an insert is funnest for me, which isn't a good recommendation for Kansas where a lot of gravel is based around, but man, it's just impossible situation out there with the rocks there. And
right. I mean, that's a pretty extreme situation, I think, because it's almost not even gravel. It's more just like chunky shards of razor sharp. You know,
I mean, I get a lot of questions in there. It's just like, it doesn't matter. Just run the most durable tire you can find, even if it feels like crap. But yeah, like that's like the Maxxis Refuse is a training tire and it's just kind of a really fine file tread. And I mean, I even ride those on single track, but I mean, yeah, they're just incredibly durable, feel pretty crappy, but they serve their purpose. Probably what I'd run out in Kansas. But yeah, it's like a fine balance, like I was saying, kind of having that nice feel on the road, but capability to go off road. So kind of juggling those two priorities and kind of walk down the middle with a 40C lighter construction with an insert like Cushcore.
Speaking of those inserts, I know you and I had a conversation a while ago about pressures. What sort of pressures are you usually running with those inserts, and what do you weigh?
Now I'm clocking around 75 kilos in world speak, or 165, 170 pounds. I started on Cushcore, like I mentioned in a little conversation. I mean, I started on regular, like a 40C tire. I was in the mid 30s and started playing around with Cushcore and started around 28. And I thought that was good. And I'd rim out every once in a while and kind of felt like, oh, don't want to push it much further. But then I just gradually dropped it further and further. And I've kind of settled down around 22, 23 PSI. And man, it just...
That's super low.
That's so low.
I mean, it sounds a little crazy, but man, it's just, especially there's some incredible quote unquote gravel riding around the Bay Area in the East Bay Hills and Marin, where it gets like really baked out in rain rut, can be super choppy. And man, the comfort you can gain in traction from that low pressure. I mentioned it does, if you're on pavement, some twisty roads, it's going to feel a little squirmy, but man, the benefits of on the off-road, especially up in Truckee, Tahoe area where I ride a lot, it can be pretty chunky. It's kind of, yeah, mind-blowing what you can ride on those kind of tires on some chunky terrain. And yeah, I have not broken any wheels so far.
Okay, that was going to be my question, is like, yeah, do you find yourself more susceptible to like sidewall slashes or anything like that at those pressures? Or
no, I feel like, I mean, that's kind of, I think, misconception. People think like higher pressure will help avoid sidewall slashes, but yeah, I think like the lower pressure kind of helps avoid some of those kind of the tension in the sidewall to get the slashing. So I mean, yeah, I've done some what some people would call pretty stupid stuff, like underbiking, riding some rock slabs and smashing those wheels pretty hard. I mean, yeah, riding the white rim, and I did the Cocopelli Trail. I might have put on 45s for that, which is pretty rough. But I mean, yeah, I've beat on, I work with Stan's riding their Grail CB7s, and after, you know, 2 or 3 years of just pounding on those wheels, I've started to fatigue some of the spokes and pop some spokes. But I mean, yeah, the rims have been solid. And I think, yeah, underestimate what that little insert can do. I mean, it definitely gets beat up. And it's one thing with the inserts are like tires, they do fatigue a bit and use some of the elasticity. But I don't think it's as big a deal on the gravel because you're not cornering as hard using those cornering forces like on the XC version. That sidewall support's a little more important. But yeah, it's another company that I was just curious to, I'd seen a lot of people running them and curious when they came out to try them, and ended up in with a partnership for them. Haven't tried some of the other inserts myself, but yeah, it's definitely a cool new invention.
You mentioned fatigue there. Are you replacing those inserts at all, like on a seasonal basis, or you haven't needed to?
Yeah, I'll get some new sets, and once they really get banged up and they'll lose a bit of their tension, there's a little trick they recommend that you can put them in some quite hot water and will restore a little bit of their elasticity. But I mean, yeah, when I'm running that low pressure and smashing on them, they will get dinged up a bit. And so before, if I'm doing like a really important race, I'll probably throw a fresh set in, and got a bunch of different wheels going with different stuff I'm always trying out.
Yeah, cool.
Well, and I'd imagine with that lower pressure, you're probably asking a little bit more of them than I would think the majority of other people who are running those in their tires.
Yeah, and I mean, that's where I ended up. But yeah, I've talked to Carl Decker as well, who's always pushing the boundaries of some equipment. And yeah, he's down in the teens, and he says
what?
He says to he likes the benefits of actually like feeling like you're almost like, yeah, rolling on the insert to get the comfort and traction. But
I mean, I guess in both of you guys, I mean, you've both spent a lot of time on cross bikes. And as far as cyclists go, you're both on the bigger and heavier end of the scale, I guess.
Yeah, he's a little lighter guy than me. But yeah, I mean, I think have a skill set, and not going to recommend probably that low for everyone. But yeah, it certainly opens up some doors to what you can ride on the gravel bike for sure.
Man. Okay. Huh. Interesting. What about, I want to ask you about frames a little bit. I know in your racing career, you've ridden a bunch of different types of frame materials. Aluminum and tie and carbon for sure. I don't remember now if you've ever raced on steel. But as
way
far as gravel bikes,
day, yeah.
Yeah, like it would have been a long time ago, like probably pre-Maxis, I would think.
Yeah.
I know that you have an association with Open for gravel, and they only do carbon, but I'm curious if you have any thoughts on frame material for carbon bikes, or how much experience you have on other materials aside from carbon anyway.
My thoughts on carbon for gravel or just in general?
Both.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly come a long way. I mean, there's definitely benefits to all the different materials. I think the flexibility that carbon gives manufacturers now is pretty incredible. I mean, it was definitely super cool when I was on Lightspeed for a couple of years to go see the metal fabrication. And I could definitely see that being a nice material for a gravel bike that's not always putting so much torque through and to be comfortable and durable. It's pretty amazing what the carbon frames. I mean, it's funny thinking back. Definitely over my career, I've seen all the different materials getting pushed to the limits. I mean, back in the day, I remember on Kona in the late 90s, we had some super light alloy frames. And I remember pre-riding the Napa World Cup and some rocks getting flicked up and going right through the down tube. So they were definitely at the point of disposable frames, and I think I saw that as well. I mean, it was pretty frightening to see after that one World Cup I won, actually in Bromont. It was super sandy soil, and I have a bit of a skew foot, my right foot, and sometimes my heel would rub, and my heel had actually rubbed through a quarter size hole in that frame during the race, and thank God it held up. But I've been super impressed, I mean, recently with carbon manufacturing, and I actually can't remember the last failure I've had on a frame since 2009, 2010. Maybe had a few cracks on some of the carbon frames just falling the wrong way accidentally, where they're not manufactured and the seat stays unintentionally kind of loading. But I mean, it seems, it's the most efficient, most affordable way for frames. Still a lot of respect for and cool to see custom manufacturers that are able to do stuff in steel and titanium. And,
You're saying you're not pining for a scandium gravel frame anytime soon then, huh?
No, I mean, I'm super psyched. I mean, I think like a custom tie frame would be pretty cool. I mean, just as, I don't know, I just remember when I started back in the day, like my local shop had a Kona Heihei in titanium. And I think early on, I always just thought titanium was such a cool material to work with, but expensive. I just remember Lightspeed did try to, they made us some full suspensions, but it was pretty insane. I think the plate for the rocker, the rear suspension link was about an $800 plate just for this like linkage between the chainstays. I don't know if it's gotten any cheaper, but yeah.
Eek. I want to come back to gearing a little bit, if you don't mind. You had mentioned that there are limitations with one by for gravel in your experience, at least depending on the situation. And it sounds like you prefer two by for a lot of the mixed terrain stuff. So where do you, there's constantly this clamoring overall that gravel bikes just don't have enough range. But do you think some of these goals that people have, or some of these desires that people have, are kind of misguided? I mean, is it possible to have too much range, or is it kind of more a matter of people really needing to tailor their range to their fitness and terrain?
I think it's just depends on, where you ride and what you want to do on the bike. I think one buy is going to be, I think, great and simple for a huge percentage of the population. But I think more reflecting on the uses I want it for some of these like gravel events, which are really high speed. I mean, done some of the events like SBT gravel where you need a big gear to stay on top of it, or you jump on some tarmac sections and the pack's flying along. And then, some of the rides I do in the up around Truckee Tahoe are up some pretty steep fire roads, and I've just used the current version of GRX, which is about a 1-to-1 gear, which was, it was manageable for myself, but I'm going hard to ride up some of these climbs. And so for general population, it's definitely a stretch depending on what kind of terrain you want to ride your bike on. So I've like tried to think like, man, you'd have to have a massive pie plate in the rear end and some bigger gaps to make one by work for what I want to do with my bike. So for now, I'm still kind of sold on two by, and we'll see how that changes. With the 10 tooth cog, it opens up some higher end gearing, but you also kind of just doesn't feel that good or is that efficient.
Do you ever change up your gearing based on like an event you're entering or where you're riding?
Yeah, definitely. Depending on the climbing and race, I'll change the rear cassette from I've been running the Shimano, so from the XTR 1140 down to the 1130 for something like SBT gravel, which is kind of more a groomed gravel road race, to something like the Oregon Gravel Grinder, which had a ton of hard climbing, so I definitely want a bit more lower end range there for sure.
That 1140, is that with a front derailleur? Or is it in a one by?
Yeah, I've made it work. I don't think you're supposed to. No. I don't know how I've made it work. Yeah. But I've messed around with all kinds of Shimano derailleurs, and I don't know. I made it work for Oregon Gravel Grinder, and then I tried again late in the summer. I don't know how I made it work, but somehow. But I know there'll probably be some new options coming up, hopefully. Or I don't know how the dirt race is going to trickle down to the gravel, or how it's going to be marketed, or how it'll be used. But we'll see if that ever shows up.
Interesting. Well, regarding the gearing, though, I think it's safe to say, I guess we can't really officially say that this is what people should do, but I think it is safe to say that Shimano's guidelines or recommendations for what will and won't work generally have a little bit of wiggle room, because I think Shimano internally has some pretty extraordinarily high standards as far as how well they think stuff should operate. And if something is running outside of that window, then they just don't recommend it. But yeah, there are certainly plenty of combinations that turn out work just fine.
You can make them work. Yeah. With a little fiddling.
Yep. Yep. And as long as you have a little bit of tolerance for maybe something not working quite as well as it's supposed to anyway.
Yeah. Gotta be aware of what you're running. Just like sometimes when I run some really light tires, you gotta be aware of the limitations.
Yeah, I dare say you've probably learned your lesson from way back early in the stands days.
Yeah, it's crazy thinking about that technological change. It's funny, I did a video looking back at my old Olympic bikes from 2000 on, and I used to run 52, 55 PSI, just because like I felt like if I ran anything less, I'd flat. And I remember the first big change was, I think it was Hutchinson had these like 300 gram natural latex tubes that we could drop it. Yeah, the Hutchinson, you could drop it down to like 32 PSI, and that was like game changing. And then, now people are running down 16, 17 PSI for XC. And that's, been pretty amazing to watch that change. That's definitely one of the biggest game changers is the tire technology and tubeless over my career.
Speaking of mountain bikes, I'm kind of curious, since since you're bringing to gravel racing and riding a very strong mountain bike background, I'm curious to hear about your perspective on gravel handlebars, because there are almost kind of like two schools of thought where you have one end of the spectrum running basically the same thing that you'd run on the road. And then you have the other end that are trying to go essentially like as wide as possible, crazy flares, that sort of thing. Where are you at with that?
I'd like to have more perspective, but I haven't been able to get any yet.
What?
But I mean, I'm come from like, yeah, crossroad, and I'm really comfortable in that position. I think I talked a bit about, for me, the hood position is most important to get that comfortable, balanced weight on the bar and the ergonomics of those brakes. And I'm curious to try a little bit of flare, but I'm, I guess, skeptical about going too wide because it just, it's really going to change the, or it's comfortable body position. I think, yeah, there's always knock-on effects, and going that wide, you're going to have to really shorten your reach with a shorter stem or reach on the bike to compensate for how wide your hands. I mean, dealt with that on riser bars on the mountain bike. The wider you go, the more you got to bring the bars back towards you. But I mean, the biggest thing I experienced is like maybe not talked about so much is the importance of flexing the handlebar. And that's the biggest thing I noticed on long days, like doing the white rim on drop bars or Cocopelli, is how much comfort there was sitting like at the end of the drops. Definitely noticed a difference between like stiffer aluminum bars and a lighter carbon bar that had some flex, how much give there is sitting on the like very end of the drops. You can get some good flex and comfort out of that. So it'll be interesting. It's, I think, the balance of developing the layup of some gravel bars might be interesting.
Because when you were racing cross a lot, I don't recall you ever really running anything super wide there, right? Because even then you were coming mostly from a mountain bike background, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've always just run a 44 centimeter bar, about as wide as what was available. I'm sure there's all kinds of things now, but I've always just don't have terribly wide shoulders. But yeah, 44 was always kind of the widest bar readily available. So that's what I've been running as a 188 centimeter, 6'2" guy.
What are your thoughts on handlebar flare?
Like I said, I haven't tried out, but I'd be curious to try some marginal flare. But yeah, I have to try it out to get a feel for myself. But yeah, I kind of worry about how much it changes the hood's angle and position. And like I said, I don't think I'd want to increase the width too much just because, it's going to be a knock-on effect. But yeah, that's something I've been trying to get on order. But you know, with scarcity, haven't been able to get in too many to try yet.
You mentioned sort of maxing out the position of the hoods, like using up the normally where they put the grippy surface on the bars, on the drop of the bar for the hood location. I guess that's an old cyclocross trick. What's the general idea there?
I think it's just, just like riser bars on mountain bike, getting a higher position and I guess a little bit more of a platform for descending. So your wrists aren't turned as much forward, just kind of wrists are kind of cocked back a little more in a more powerful hand position. But yeah, it's definitely a balance. Yeah, the more you kind of cock the grips up a bit, the further the brake lever moves away. So you definitely have to play a bit with the brake lever reach to make sure it's still comfortable in the drops descending. But I mean, that's a big thing. Like I found like how much more you can stay in the hoods with the new GRX, and I hear the new Durace hoods are equally impressive. Don't have experience with the SRAM, but yeah, there's been huge strides in the comfort and ergonomics in the hoods and the braking power.
Well, I know you're also a huge fan of aero bars in gravel, right? Massive fan.
Only on group rides. mass start. Yeah, I've had some fun stirring the pot there. I think it's just love to point out a bit of hypocrisy when I see it, I guess.
I feel like that was kind of like a short-lived trend. Like you don't really see a whole lot of that anymore.
Oh, I think it's like, I mean, I just, I mean, more laughed at. I mean, I think there's there's room for people to ride whatever they want to ride. But I mean, yeah, seeing the World Tour pros come over and then try to say that it's completely safe to ride in a mass start event with aero bars is definitely questionable. And I definitely saw some incidents and talked to people who've been crashed out at Unbound. And anyway, I'll keep advocating. I think it's like something that a lot of the pros would love to see just a rule set. I think in gravel, people seem to be afraid to make rules, but as long as it's not a rules, people are going to do what they can to try to win.
All right. Well, I guess that means we're not going to hold our breath for a Kabar aero bar to go with your Kabolt through axle.
No, I mean, I did as much advocating for a rule for that out there at Unbound a couple of years ago with a whole kit. But I don't know if I'll be changing anyone's mind, but good to see rule in place in a few races.
Right. Well, fair enough. That makes sense. What about suspension? Because that is something that I know you are a pretty big advocate for. What are your thoughts on suspension for gravel then?
Well, I got the one funny story, James. I don't know if you ever heard back or feedback. Funny story, thinking back to 2012, I think I was testing the Fox IRD, I think it was called at the time, electronic suspension, which was pretty incredible product. Just the little toggle lever that locked out the front and rear at the same time and connected to the DI2. And I was testing it and put a picture. Funny, someone put a battery on my bike, and that was before the XTR DI2 came out. And you wrote a speculative article about XTR DI2, which it caused quite a shitstorm among the legal departments between Fox and Shimano about controlling their athlete and getting me to shut up because it was kind of blowing the water.
Oops.
So Jeff. When I see your name, I always laugh at that moment. But this is a question about suspension on gravel bikes.
Yep.
And my thoughts, yeah. Yeah, I guess, I mean, I've been planning when I first brought, Fox brought up to me a couple of years ago, I guess. I don't know, sometime pre-COVID, I started testing it. And on the open, I've definitely got to play around with different wheel sizes and tires with 650B with 2.1 tires on, which is a ton of fun. Infamously won Iceman Cometh on the drop bars with the 650B wheels. And like you see with the mountain bike, there's a lot of benefits of just higher volume tires as far as comfort. And that's what I was kind of felt like. I'd rather add weight on higher volume tires than add suspension. So, but, you know, like I said, I'm happy to try anything and got the Fox 4 to test out. And it was kind of one of those things that, like, I was quite surprised how dramatic a difference such a small amount of suspension I can make. It makes a difference, similar to Cushcore, but immediately on like some of the riding I was doing here, it was a tiny amount of travel, but the amount of like traction and I'd say pucker free descending, I just like didn't have to touch the brakes. That, and I think a lot of these like weak links had kind of caught up the brakes and the tires and the Cushcore, where I think there was finally room for suspension. And I'm not going to say it's going to be a good fit for every situation. Like I took the fork off for SBT gravel, which mentions kind of more groomed gravel race, but the majority of riding I do now, absolutely I'll run the fork. And it took a bit of experimentation to get the most out of it. You coming from mountain bike background, you set up a fork with some support to kind of push off. But the gravel fork really found the biggest benefit was just that small bump compliance and comfort for those long rides, similar to the damping you get from the tire inserts. Man, the comfort you could gain from that little bit of travel that worked on the small and medium sized bumps. For sure, I'd clap it out if you're riding really technical stuff, but don't think gravel bikes are really designed for that. So yeah, the initial fork I had 30 mils, and it was pretty dramatic, and man, a lot of fun where I could take that and definitely push the limits a bit like I mentioned before, doing some underbiking and fun time testing it out there in Utah on some of those FKTs.
So how do you set up your fork? And this, I should point out that this fork that may or may not officially exist yet, because Fox hasn't actually announced it yet or anything, but
it's been a complicated release.
To say the least. How do you generally set up your gravel suspension fork then? Because as you mentioned, it's a different thing. It's a different animal from mountain bike suspension. You have so little travel, generally between just like 30 and 50 millimeters. So are you running sort of similar levels of sag and like, you know, what's your damper setup like? And like, what do you, for people who are running suspension, what do you think people should run them at as far as, you know, how they feel?
I mean, it's much lighter action than the mountain bike suspension for sure. So it's hard. It's such, just the one I was testing for ton, not a lot of travel, so even hard to measure sag, but I'd say it's more in the 30 to 40%. I would more set the pressures by riding a bunch and having feel, and for that Fox fork, doesn't really matter the pressure, I guess. But yeah, I was definitely, you want it to be active, want it to get full travel. Or on a mountain bike, you don't want it to be too soft or you're going to dive on the descents and not be able to carry as much speed. But kind of the opposite on the gravel fork, you want it to be super light action and moving all the time. As typically on gravel, man, you're seated and riding, small, medium bumps, and having that active fork is where you really get a lot of a comfort and performance. So it's definitely a little bit different approach for sure, lighter action and more sag I was running. But I found if I set it up to have that kind of more supportive compression, just, man, I mean, it helped on more technical stuff, but you just weren't getting the comfort on those long rides and not making the rides as enjoyable. It wasn't worth the wait if you're kind of, that's what I found with the C-dropper was great on really steep technical, but just in general on a gravel ride, I wasn't riding that steep a gradient. So if you're not using it, is it worth carrying around the weight? And it is a little weight penalty. But for me, yeah, for the general riding, it's something for sure I'd ride in most situations.
That gravel fork, is it normal for you to bottom it out on anything like technical or any sort of like anytime you catch air? Is that sort of the way you run it?
I'll definitely clap it out multiple times in a ride, depending on how fast or, I mean, I definitely like to jump on some blue single track here and there, or definitely up in the Truckee Tahoe area, there's a lot of rocky, pretty high speed descents. So it definitely, man, gives way more confidence to be able to maneuver and switch lines with it. But yeah, there's still going to be probably multiple times I kind of hit something unexpectedly.
And I would imagine not even just in terms of the comfort, but you do, I guess, just like mountain bike suspension, you get quite a big boost in terms of like cornering, traction and braking control, that sort of thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was surprised on descents. I'd ridden a bunch without the fork, how much more comfortable I was to just not touch the brakes for much longer. Just, I mean, yeah, you know, with suspension on any moving vehicle, how much more control and traction you can get into braking. Like I said, it's all a bit of a balance. It's not going to be for everyone, but yeah, man, it's really increased the bandwidth and routes. And that's what's, I think, funnest for me is like, yeah, where I can ride and what kind of routes I can link up. It's been really fun riding these bikes.
You mentioned dropper post a couple of times. And I think I'm generally in agreement with you that for the majority of just kind of everyday gravel riding, at least for me anyway, I don't see the benefit, enough benefit to justify the weight increase. And I guess also the hit that you get in terms of ride quality too. But do you think your cross country background influences that at all? Because you spent an awful lot of time racing, just, you know, high posting around on World Cup courses.
Yeah, I mean, I think depending on your skill level, it'll benefit you more or less. But for me, I don't know, it's probably more related to racing cross and body position on the bike. But I found it a hard adjustment descending quickly without the seat kind of there as a third point to kind of balance on my inner thigh, kind of control the bike lean angle. That it's definitely a different style of descending with the dropper post out of the way. And so I just almost felt more comfortable on high speed, low gradient to have that extra contact point with the seat. And I think, yeah, like anyone who's race cross knows what you can ride on those bikes. Can push limits pretty far on even skinnier tires and on steep descents. But yeah, I think it's just a comfort level, technical level on how much it's going to benefit you and on what kind of trails you want to ride. I know up in Squamish, there's quite a gravel group there riding all kinds of crazy rough terrain. I don't know, I just like to ride my mountain bike up there more, but amazing how popular gravel is up there, and I can definitely see dropper post being a little more effective in some of that terrain.
Yeah, I know, our co-worker, I should say, or I guess longtime co-worker for several years now, but Mike Levy from Pink Bike, he's been doing a lot of gravel up in Squamish too, right? You've been riding with him up there at all?
I haven't got out with Mike, but yeah, it's just, man, it's so much more rugged terrain up there. A lot of the access roads and fire roads are really steep, and that's where, I mean, I did, there's some beautiful loops around some of the mountains and back roads, but it's, yeah, some steep terrain, and that's where I struggled a bit with the wind by gearing bike I had up there, whether it was 2 summers ago or the summer before. And yeah, that's where I definitely need some low gear range and capable bike.
I guess just to provide a little bit of context, or just to remind people, when you were mentioned just now about how you kind of like having that saddle as an additional point of control, just to provide some perspective, I mean, you have also been dabbling in enduro in recent years too. So it's not like you're not familiar with dropper post, or it's not like you don't think that there is benefit in the right application.
No, I mean, it's hard to imagine, yeah, mountain biking now without dropper post. And yeah, first thought 125 mil was enough, and then moved to 150, 175. And yeah, I think that's probably one of my favorite disciplines right now is blind enduro. People on the podcast know that term, but yeah, it's these events where there's no practice and kind of backcountry events, and Trans-Cascadia, Trans-Provence, one of the original ones, and that's probably one of the events I'm most looking forward to is Ash, who started the kind of the original Trans-Provence back in the day as a new event called the Stone King Rally over in France in the middle of summer. Probably one of the events I'm looking most forward to. So, I mean, I think, yeah, I just love riding all kinds of bikes. And I think, yeah, it helps bring a perspective when I'm testing tires or suspension across disciplines to at least be aware and try to participate at a high level across everything.
So bringing together all of your pretty diverse experience in riding in general, and looking at gravel bikes. So we've mentioned already before that they're really kind of all over the place in terms of design and geometry and kind of intended use philosophy, that sort of thing. Do you think we're going to see any sort of consolidation there, or and should there even be any? Like where do you think gravel bikes are going to be heading in general?
I think we're getting close with the components. I think there's still a bit of evolution, or at least I'm pushing on a little bit of the, and we're seeing some already on the rim width and the larger volume tires on kind of finding a sweet spot there. Yeah, I still think there's some room to grow on the gearing side, kind of dialing that in. But I don't know. I see more involvement on the event side than the equipment right now. I think the events are a bit behind of what this kind of fun adventures you can have. I think there's, I mean, that's when I have lots of opinions on gravel, but one of them is, I don't know why we have to have so many long events. I think it's, I mean, amazing accomplishment and experience to do event and finish an event like Unbound. I mean, similar to that Ironman experience to go dig deep and push through and accomplish that, but don't necessarily think we need to be doing one of those every weekend. And kind of like if downhill racing got stuck on Repack or the Kamikaze, I think the bikes, you can ride so much more. And I think I'm hoping to see events evolved to kind of encompass all kinds of routes and fun you can have on these bikes. And I don't know, 100 miles is enough for me. I think, when I'm looking at my event schedule, I'm looking at events that sound like fun. And yeah, one I haven't done it yet, but one that's popped up on my calendar, which kind of looks like fun, is Rule of Three down in Bentonville, that has some pavement and some gravel and some single track to finish it off. I'm not that excited about the sharp rocks down there, but sounds like a fun format. And I don't know, yeah, hope to see some more 3 or 4 hour events.
It's almost kind of like back in the days of Norba, where you really had to use the same bike for all disciplines, right?
Yeah, and that's what I mean. I think it's fun. I mean, one of the cool things about gravel or attractive things is, yeah, bringing people together from all different cycling disciplines. I mean, we saw that back in some of the cyclocross days, where you'd have some road riders and mountain bikers and pure cross. And it's cool to see that gravel has grown in, or cyclocross has grown into a pure discipline, and people can focus on that. And I think we're seeing gravel grow into it to self, hopefully, where people can grow up and become gravel discipline specific. But a lot of turmoil and discussion and opinions for sure right now.
All right, Jeff. Well, I think we've picked your brain enough on this point. And I know you've got to go back to, you know, kind of regrowing those old sideburns of yours. You get some hair growing to do. Thanks so much for joining us today. And we hope to have you on the show again soon.
Yeah, fun talking to you guys. And hopefully we'll see you guys around sometime at an event here soon.
Yeah, sounds good. Hopefully I'll try not to get you in trouble anytime in the next few years here.
Sounds good.
Cool. Thanks again, Jeff.